Yes, it's amazing how much ISDN can suddenly change you around into all sorts of other exciting things. We use the term Renaissance woman sparingly, but there are one or two individuals who deserve the term Renaissance woman because of their work within broadcasting, within a whole range of things, etc. And the person who definitely deserves that is the true legend, that is Joe Wiley. Joe, are you there?
I am here, yeah. Hello,
excellent.
How are you?
Well, fantastic. I'll tell you what, it's been trying to... Getting to Maida Vale from Lincoln would have been easier just to walk it on this setup with respect to ISDN. But still, we are connected and life continues its own way. And the line that I think sort of sums up the computer systems we have here, you need a holiday. New study shows British families plan multiple getaways every year. And what better way than to actually turn to your good self, Joe, for this whole importance of actually taking a holiday and taking a break and also being organised in doing so. So how do you do it, Joe? What's the secret?
I think always having something to look forward to is great within a family. So whether you're going to go somewhere in the UK and have, you know, a lovely holiday in Cornwall or Blackpool or wherever, it's just great for the kids to have things to look forward to. And as a family, you know, you're going to have some special time together. And then, you know, if you can go somewhere further afield, then that is all well and good. And it does help to be organised. Organised is not my middle name, really. But I know when it comes to holidays, there are certain things that will make our life a lot easier and we'll have a lot more fun. So one of the main things, it's all about gadgets with us, because I've got kids. I've got a 4.5-year-old, I've got a 12-year-old and 14-year-old boys, and then I've got a 21-year-old daughter as well. So it's quite complicated trying to keep everybody entertained, and that's always my big challenge.
And don't get me started on the geckos and the grasshoppers you were talking about on the show last night. That's a different line entirely, but still.
Oh no, I've got to get somebody to babysit the gecko now when we go away. I haven't thought about that.
Lord. New research by American Express reveals that over 2/3 of the nation travel up to 4 times a year, nearly a quarter taking over 5 trips. How do you fit it in, Joe? I mean, from something like yourself, who obviously, as we say, BBC Radio 2's finest, and I say this when we had Trevor Dan around yesterday, actually doing his own unique stuff.
Oh, my mentor. Course,
yeah, there you go. When you're looking at that whole setup, etc., is it a case of you need to ensure that you schedule it into the 365 days that we actually have each year?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll always make sure that we book 2 big holidays away. And, you know, if you've got one of these travel reward schemes, it makes an awful lot of sense. If you've got a big family, or if you've just got a family, people you've got to sort out, if you're going a few times a year going away, you can get some really good benefits. So the American Express Gold Card allows you to earn points. So when you're shopping for those holiday treats, whether it's, you know, mascara or whether it's DVDs or headphone splitters, whatever, at the airport just before you're going away, it can be a lot cheaper than you think than it necessarily has to be. It's all part of planning your holiday and kind of getting yourself organised in the build-up. So it means that you can travel on your own terms, yeah. Really.
Got to say, I don't really do the mascara these days. But anyway, Katie Grimerson, any questions for Jo?
Yeah, how did you become interested in broadcasting?
So there's a nice 5 hours on for you there, Jo. Off you go.
I think it was because I was always obsessed with music when I was at college. When I was at school, and just my dad brought me up listening to lots of music. And I didn't really have a master plan of what I was going to do and where I was going to go with my life. And I just fell into working in radio. I went to college in Brighton, and I did languages when I was at college. Didn't know what I was going to do. Somebody suggested I go and work at a local radio station because I could get to play records on the radio. And I did that, and one thing led to another, and here I am 20 years later with a job still in radio playing records.
And broadcasting legend, as we rightly say. 5 top tips that we come through, and I did like the line passionate traveller, because you wouldn't want to be an unpassionate traveller, really.
No.
Passionate traveller on this whole thing. Make sure there's something for the whole family. Keep the kids entertained. Peace of mind. Don't forget to treat yourself. And savvy spending. Ending. I suppose in times of austerity, number 5 is equally important, really.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why travel reward schemes are, they just make complete and utter sense to me. If you're travelling with your family, then it just makes sense to, you know, make use of the benefits you can get without doing anything particularly differently. So whenever you're doing your supermarket shopping, if you're using your gold card, you can be building up points that you can spend when you go to the airports.
Joe, it's been a genuine delight. I've got lots of my students who would say, well, the Joe Wiley. I say, yeah, but she is the fantastic. And Lincoln needs you, Joe. That's all I have to say. You know, we obviously need to coordinate that whole setup. So we've got 2 final questions. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephone debut here on the Madrid Drive Morning Edition?
Of course I have, yes. It's been wonderful.
So can we look forward to connecting with you again, hopefully in the not-too-distant future, and keeping us appraised of travellers' tales and various other factors as well?
I will keep you abreast of whatever you need. You're very, very kind. Thank you so much.
Positive stuff all the way. A round of applause for Joe Wiley, please. Absolutely sensational. But if you close your eyes, does it almost feel like now? So in many ways, it has been a show just jam-packed full of legends. We have our countryside correspondent, Minty Steed, or Richard Fitzwilliams, of course, our ace critic and guru, Ian Lennox, our Tyneside view and perspective producer, Ralph Titterton, curator of the Barry Gray Legacy, Dr. Susanna Lipscomb, of course, from the wonderful behind the scenes of historical makeovers and such like series on Yesterday TV, Joe Wiley just off there to plan off holidays and various other bits and pieces, and now the creme de la creme, a gentleman who has been quite rightly said, without his involvement as script editor in the John Pertwee era, the whole series would basically just been a little bit less. It would have been a lot less in many ways, etc. We are delighted to welcome Mickey's debut on the show and ahead of the upcoming piece at the Lincoln Inspired Festival, the legend that is Terence Dix. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good to connect with you, good self. Now, I've worked with Graham Harper for about 25 years, etc. He's always been singing your praises, always keen for that.
Oh, bless him.
You obviously will be sharing the platform.
Yeah, he's one of the few, I think the only director to sign... survive from my day to the present day.
Indeed, exactly. Yeah, precisely so. I like to use the term, it's kind of because of his talent as opposed to survival. It sounds a bit like a fittest side of things, but never mind. Terence, clearly you are associated with the series Doctor Who. Lots of other things that you had obviously done and connected with before from that point of view. In terms of becoming a writer to start off with, was that something which was always in the game plan? I mean, obviously working on scripts for the Avengers, working on a whole range of other factors, etc. Did you always sort of think, yeah, it's creating images and words, that's what I'm about, being a wordsmith?
No, it was the only way I could possibly see that I would earn a living, because it was the only thing I was good at. When I was in school, I was the kind of child that always had his head in a book, you know, and people said, go outside and do something healthy, which has given me a lifelong distaste of going outside and doing anything healthy. And so I was, throughout school, I was top of the class in English and middle to bottom in almost everything else. And I eventually got a scholarship to Cambridge, an English scholarship to Cambridge, from my grammar school in the East End. And there's only one thing I'm good at, so I can't see no other way of earning a living.
It's following the passion and a whole range of things. I'll quote, actually, from one of your wonderful classic Doctor Who texts, winning is everything and nothing, losing is nothing and everything. All that matters is the game. This, of course, coming from Players, written by yourself for the Colin Baker Doctor Who era. This is a standard question which inevitably I'll be asking on the 11th of I was going to say November. It's May, of course, we're getting together. I don't know, Terence, time. It just folds in on itself. But in terms of the legacy of Doctor Who, I mean, obviously 5 decades, is he the natural successor to heroes like Sherlock Holmes, like Tarzan, maybe like the Saint, etc.? Or is there something unique in terms of what Sidney Newman and Verity Lambert actually put together, and obviously yourself and the late, great Barry Letts actually worked on, in terms of the whole John Pertwee era?
Well, obviously there is, because he's very much still here. Mm. And I think the BBC, certainly in my time, you see, it's not true today, but in my time, the BBC never realised the value of what they got. Because there are just a few names which, as you say, you know, ring a bell with everybody. Mm. Sherlock Holmes, Tarzan, you know, and even if they don't know or like that genre, they've got a vague idea what it means, you know, what it's about. Doctor Who's the same. And Doctor Who just kind of passed into the language, but the BBC never realised it.
We're, of course, going to be joined by that wonderful actor, Richard Franklin, for the event on the 11th at the Lincoln Drill Hall. And I got the tickets going very well from that point of view. Katie, questions from yourself, because obviously you're 40 young. In fact, actually, Terence, I reveal that Katie wasn't even born when the Sylvester McCoy era sort of ended as far as the Doctor Who scenario is concerned. But Katie, any questions you want to put to Terence?
Yeah, what do you think of the recent series of Doctor Who, as it's been, like, coming back?
Well, for one thing, it's a great thing, you know, that it's come back, and it's come back with such a bang. And we owe all that to Russell T. Davies. Mm. And it's totally... Well, obviously, you see, after so many years, it's totally different. We were working in, you know, the old sort of... We did a series of serials, 25-minute episode each week, end on a cliffhanger, get them to come back next Saturday. And so we had a certain amount of leisure, as it were. We had 4 parts, sometimes we had 6 parts. Now, in this show, it seems to me they've got no leisure at all. They're working in 50 minutes and everything whizzes through at a tremendous rate. Mm. And it's maybe, you know, that people's expectations have changed, you know. It's brilliant. I think it's brilliantly done. The special effects are incredibly good. I sometimes find it a little quick and confusing to gather what the hell was going on.
Yeah, it's interesting, because obviously you're correctly looking. 13 shows, you've got, arguably that's the equivalent of 26 half-hour shows or the sort of line in the 70s, etc. There was still an attempt, though. I mean, I think it's fair to say, when you kind of base the Doctor back on Earth within the John Pertwee era, of ensuring that there was a kind of action-adventure, and certainly that whole notion of the introduction of UNIT, those kind of things. Was that based on a budget consideration, or was it just a case of...
Absolutely, right. You put your finger on it. The reason for why anybody does anything in television is usually money. And that was a decision made, actually, not by Barry and I, but by our predecessors, Peter Bryant, Derek Sherwin, in order to save money, because the show was all... See, science fiction is expensive by definition, you know. You go to another planet, you've got to build it, create it, costume the actors, everything. If you can shoot on the streets of London, as it were, with the actors wearing their own suits and contemporary cars, you're obviously going to save. Mm. At least that was the theory. In fact, it didn't happen. Those shows were, in fact, any cheaper. But that was the intention, and I'm completely schizophrenic about this. I mean, I love UNIT and the UNIT stories, and, you know, the Brigadier and Sergeant Levine and Captain Yates, all Richard's character, that whole setup is a lovely family feel. And I spent the first part of my time on Who trying to get rid of it. Because if the Doctor is on Earth, it's not Doctor Who anymore. Doctor Who is... I always used to say the base plot for Doctor Who is the Doctor says to his companions, I know this lovely little planet called Metabilis 3. I'll take you there for a trip. And they go and they get out the TARDIS and they say, let's take a look around, isn't it all lovely? And then something horrible jumps on them. That is your basic Doctor Who plot.
You'd think they'd learn. I mean, if they took Joe Wiley's advice in planning for the holidays, if you're going to go to Metabilis Theatre at 3, you might sort of at least get that thing sorted through.
I put in one of my books, those tips never work out.
No, it's just very, very strange from that point of view. There are a whole heap of folk who probably actually got their first experience of literature in many ways. And I noticed that we've had you compared to Dickens and a whole range of folk, and quite rightly so, it has to be said. But obviously working with Malcolm Hulk, I quote from Gary Russell's introduction to the recently revamped Doctor Who and the Day of the Daleks, that your good self, Terence, and Malcolm Hulk made him want to be a writer, full stop. No amount of Blyton, Kipling, Utley, and every other writer's work he had devoured prior to this experience held a candle to Terence Dix and Malcolm Hulk. Oh, sure, those other writers were good, but these two, they were genii.
That's very kind of him. I have, in fact, been told, you know, many, many times, reading your books got me reading, you know, saved my education, turned me into a reader. In fact, the other day I got a book and a very nice letter from someone who said that he was judged sort of subnormal because his English wasn't good. And he learnt it through reading my books, and he's now a published author.
That's
immensely gratifying.
Yeah, and it does, because, I mean, ultimately, you have that literary aspect that in all of the whiz-bangs, smashes, and all the rest of the bits and pieces, it's nice to actually sort of work through that. And, of course, these days, Katie, these books were actually published in the 70s where we didn't even know what VHS was, you know, or video recordings and DVDs. It just wasn't there, and iPlayers, just a whole range of
Yes, indeed. I mean, you see, in those days, Who was never repeated, practically never. Yeah. If you missed the show or you come to it too late, you were never, ever going to see it. And the novelizations were then the only way of recreating that experience, you know, of getting to know the show. I mean, nowadays, everything available has been first in VHS and then in DVD. But it was very different then when the novels were coming out.
I am counting the hours, and I think there are about 168 of them, or maybe a little bit more, until Saturday, May the 11th, when obviously you'll be joining Graham Harper, Richard Franklin and myself, and a Dalek, I believe, at the Lincoln Drill Hall. I think there are a couple of tickets still available. It's 1:30 through to 3:30 p.m. We'll be actually sorting things through from that point of view. Of course, since then, Terence, you're also going to be involved with Sci-Fi London, I believe. You're doing something on Sunday, isn't that right?
Yeah, I'm doing something on Sunday evening, which I think is mostly about novels, than the television. Yeah.
You say just shows together. So we have two final questions to put to you, sir, at this particular moment. They are the crucial ones. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us on your Midweek Drive Morning Edition debut today?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, most enjoyable. It's never a problem for me to talk about who, Whenever I get an offer, I always say, yes, fine.
Oh, right. Well, so
fun to do.
The next critical question, Terence, is can we hopefully look forward to welcoming you back, not only to the Lincoln event a week on Saturday, but hopefully coming and joining us on the show? I mean, I feel, having been a regular with Graham, who's kind of clocked up about 100 and odd of these shows with me over the years, etc., you've been absent for the team for far too long. So will you return to become a semi-regular correspondent with us?
Well, by all means, yes. You only have to ask. Give me a call.
I think a knighthood for Terence Dix needs to be sorted. Sorry, I'll have a word
with
you.
Yeah, you can lobby for that if you like.
I think campaign will start now. Terence Dix, as ever, we salute you. Take care now.
Thank you very much.